Good afternoon, everyone. This is Antonia. Thank you for joining me today on So Now You Know. I hope you've had a blessed week since I talked to you last Thursday. As some of you guys remember, or perhaps you didn't catch the show last week, we talked to three lawyers, law professors from Albany Law School. And they gave us some really good insight into Black history and over time, how the law has developed into what it is today and how that has affected a lot of the hardship and systemic racism that we are now seeing. It's always been there, but now we have a real dose of reality over the last couple of months with things that have been going on around the country. So I hope you had a great week. I hope you're ready for the weekend to celebrate July 4th. It seems like it's all one big holiday, right? Just blending all in together over all this time that we have been quarantined, but hopefully you're getting some fresh air and getting out there, wearing your mask, being responsible. Social distancing is important during this time. I'm very excited about a show today. We are going to be talking to Stephen Hurst about his photography. And he and I are related. So we're going to talk a little bit about how that is. Because as you know, So Now You Know is all about reaching out to friends and family that I know that are doing some amazing things. And Stephen is a phenomenal photographer. And hopefully you'll be able to see some of his work. If you're watching us on Facebook, you'll be able to see some of the work that he has done and projects that he's working on. And then if you are just listening to us, you'll hear his story. And then hopefully you can check in with us at Talk Radio NYC or check us out on Facebook so you can see some of the work that he does. But I'm sure he'll share some information of how you can get in touch with him. So I hope that everyone, you know, it's been such a worrisome time for everyone. So I'm hoping that you're all taking care of yourself, right? We need a mental break. Sometimes we just need to stop, relax. And if people say stop, I mean, how much more space can I get? I'm sitting at home all day, or I'm sitting with my family. I can't get out. I can't do the normal things. But to really just stop and meditate or take a moment just to think about and be reflective of how fortunate we are, right? That if you're healthy and you're well, and if you're not healthy, I also reach out to you and pray for you that you will get through this. So I hope that you also check out other shows at talkradio.nyc and just listen to us all day. There's some amazing shows with amazing guests. And as my show, you might learn something new and different. So I want to bring in Stephen to come join us and welcome. Hello, Stephen. How are you?
Shows at talkradio.nyc and just listen to us all day.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Welcome, welcome. Okay. It's been a minute.
Yeah, long time, long
it's
time.
It's been a long time. And you know, it's interesting with social media, right? It's kind of like I see you all the time, right? I know your life story and vice versa on Facebook, but then to actually see each other, it's been, I want to say 10 years maybe since I left Brooklyn.
When did you move from Brooklyn?
That's the answer. When I left, I had just had Andrew, my youngest.
Okay.
And he's now 15 and he turned one here. Yeah. So it's actually longer than that. But wow. I feel like it was yesterday, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So welcome, welcome. And just to share with our audience, for those that are listening or watching on Facebook, we are related, and you're going to correct me on the story, because we are related through marriage. Because, yes, is that how you say it, right? So your mom was cousins with my husband's dad.
Yes, I think that my grandmother on my mother's side was sisters with your husband's father's mother, something like that.
So a great aunt.
Yes.
Right? That would have made her a great cousin. Because I know it was a little removed. And you know, you always have the first cousin, second cousin.
Absolutely.
But I
Absolutely.
Do think on his side, there was a direct line. There was a,
yes.
a direct line. So maybe you and he are like third cousins. Maybe. And
whatever works, whatever
right?
works. Family.
But it was so good. So it was so interesting because when we had moved to, we'd gotten married and then we were downtown, 9/11 happened. So we moved out to Brooklyn. So it was really, and I didn't know anyone. I was from Massachusetts. And so for us to be there and then to meet family, because his side of the family is all from Brooklyn. And I can't
yes.
remember if your mom, did she grow up in Brooklyn?
Yeah, she was born, I live in the neighborhood that she, you know, grew up in. And she has a saying, born, bred, and dead in Brooklyn. That's her goal.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's how we found it, right? Because his folks, I think it was Hancock and Bed-Stuy, is where they grew up and still had that home. And I believe, you know, when we were looking to move, that there was no other place but to go to Brooklyn. So we ended up where we were. But yeah, I don't think there was any, there was definitely not an option to come to Massachusetts. Let me just say that. There was definitely not an option to come to Massachusetts. But, and I loved Brooklyn. It took, you know, it took a little adjusting. But I do like Brooklyn.
Brooklyn is an acquired taste. You know, it can be noisy, it can be obnoxious, but it can also be beautiful, you know, if you let it be.
Yes, I miss it. And I always say, you know, now that we've moved out to the suburbs, I always say, you know, I'm going to come back to Brooklyn, because I do miss it. I think when we had young kids, we outgrew the space. And then, you know, having toddlers, sure, like, I need space. And then I missed Massachusetts. So it was equidistant for us to come to Connecticut. But I, you know, when I left, I was like, oh, why do I hear everyone on the street? Why do I hear every noise? Why can't people park? Why can't, you know? But then within 6 months of when I go back, I'm like, I miss it. I miss it so much. And that area's changed. I mean, Brooklyn's just changed so much.
Yes, it's absolutely.
Completely changed a whole bunch. I do say, though, the double parking when I get to Brooklyn, I'm like, okay, I'm done. Time to go home. that never changed.
Yeah, having your driveway, that's a luxury here. That's definitely a luxury.
Yes. Yeah. Cause that I could never get used to, but I definitely miss the city. But how have things been going?
Good, good. Things have been going good for me. You know, I just kind of, during the COVID experience, the COVID era, it just hit everyone, creatives, like a sledgehammer, on multiple fronts. And, you know, I tried to look at it as a positive when the opportunity presented itself that I could do personal work, that I could really focus on some things that I haven't done before, and only answer to myself. So that I think has been a good process for me. It's a process of kind of rediscovery and teaching myself different things. Mm-hmm. So so far, you know, it's been good. So yeah.
And I can't remember, and it could have been that you were into photography when we first met way back, but I can't.
Yes.
I don't know if it definitely has evolved. Am I right?
Yeah.
Since then?
Yes. You know, photography has always been, I would say, part of my life. I kind of inherited that from my father. I remember growing up that he would always have photographs on the wall, photographs that he's taken. Right. He was always into photography. He's passed on now, but I have probably six or seven of his cameras, and they, you know, just as mementos. It was always part of his DNA as long as I can remember. And I was in college at NYU, and I was more kind of transitioning towards cinema studies, and it's more so like the study of film as an art form. So it's more kind of criticism and history and so forth. And I kind of was out of photography. It wasn't there. And I remember one year for my birthday, my dad sent me an anthology, basically a cross-section of Gordon Park's work.
Nice.
And so 200, 300 pages, I don't remember. And it was just this whole cross-section of his work. And I just started looking at the photographs and really absorbing them. And then that's what I guess it clicked for me, is like, aha, I should be doing this. I should be taking photographs, because it just moves me in a way that maybe other art forms haven't. Right. And so that's how it started. And then, you know, there's a whole seesaw process of trying to discover what your language is and, you know, how you relate to photography, but how photography relates to you. So, that's where it began.
And so where do you feel like that aha moment came that you liked photography, but then you've also done different types, like, right? I've seen you know, you have your wedding professional photos that you take. And then I love the still photos that you do in the city of different people, which we're going to try to share. I mean, we're new to Zoom. Usually we're in the studio and it's all audio. So you're gonna have to bear with me, but I want to get all your photos up to share with you. So what keeps you in it? Like, I know, and the thing about New York is there are so many stories to tell, right? And you capture that in all your photography. But what would you say is your favorite type of photography that you like to take?
You know, it's funny because it oscillates. It goes up and down between different, I don't know, genres, I would say. But in the short answer, whenever someone asks me, what type of photographer are you? What do you like to shoot? I just say, I shoot people. That's my main thing is I'm a people watcher and I'm a people lover. So I love to see different faces, different ways of walking, different styles. And early on, I started off doing street photography because that was most accessible to me. And so I kind of built a whole language around that. And then what I found is street photography, in many respects, is one of the most challenging forms of photography in the sense that you can't predict or isolate what's about to come to you. You have to always be ready. Yeah.
You get what you get. You don't get upset.
Exactly. You know, you see someone with a beautiful look and they just came around the corner and you didn't get the photograph. So then you can't go to them and say, can you do that again and pretend that I'm not there? You know, so that's when I started to kind of transition it and shift into doing more portraiture. And I think at the time, some fashion. And though fashion was rewarding in a certain sense, it wasn't kind of financially sustainable in terms of when you're collaborating, there's a lot of freebies that have to be done on everyone's part and an extensive amount of time in order to build a portfolio. So then I kind of got disillusioned with that for a little bit, and it then switched back to street photography. But then I realized that there's this, the things that I loved most were like this composed portrait kind of randomness. And so in this most recent project, I wanted to kind of see how I could kind of blend those two. The shots were very composed, but at the same time, I was pulling people randomly that I saw from afar into that scene. So I could kind of bring those two worlds together.
Now, do you ask people ahead of time or because, like I said, New York is just, I'm sure it's just a canvas, right? And some of the pictures that you get are so raw and real. And the beauty of it is that when you look at the picture, you get it, right? You see the empathy or you see the sadness or you see the happiness and you get it. So I always wonder, do you reach out to the people that you're about to take the picture or do you just take them? And then someone says, oh my gosh, why there's a picture of me.
Well, in terms of street photography, no, because I don't want to ruin that language, that communication that's happening between like known and unknown. And a lot of times will shoot from the hip. I'm not pulling the camera up to my face and I just see the moment. Sometimes I'll see someone from a block away and then I'll just try to kind of position myself to anticipate their arrival within my space and then take the photograph. But I don't, and there might be a question like, what is this guy doing with the camera? Like kind of fumbling with it by, you know, his stomach. But at the same time, there's an instant reaction sometimes on a person's face that you wouldn't get if you had asked to take their photograph. Right. And not that I'm kind of bombarding them, like, you know, kind of gotcha. I'm not going gotcha. I'm kind of receiving and letting them come to me and then anticipate that this is the right time to press the shutter.
And do you ever have people that are like, did you just take my picture? Give that back. Like, do you ever get people that are upset about it?
I've never
because New York's crazy.
Twice, it is crazy. But you know, there's old tools and techniques about how you're not really taking a photograph, but you are. And also now with everyone with the selfies and the iPhones and taking those pictures, if I'm working with a small camera, then they see it as less of a threat that I'm kind of like, you know, grabbing some moment that they wouldn't otherwise be doing themselves. But there have been a couple of times where I'm in Times Square. I was doing a lot of photography in Times Square last year. And I remember one time someone said, did you just take my picture? And I just kept walking. You know, I just kept walking. And me?
And, right.
What are you talking about? No. I just kept moving from there. But there are but for the most part, I think it's only happened. I've taken thousands and thousands of photographs. I think there's only been two times where people have really objected, that being one of them. But outside of that, it's sometimes if they catch me, they smile. You know, they recognize, oh, like this is fun, or what are you doing? You know, and then they enjoy the process. So, or sometimes they'll say,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, sometimes they'll say, oh, can you take a picture with our camera now, you know, or something like that.
That's what I was going to say. Like and it seems like it would be the out of town folks that are like, oh, hey, and the New Yorkers would be like, screw you, man. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
It's the people from around the way that are like, oh, geez. Or, you know, maybe they make it even a more colorful picture. They chuck you the bird or something. I don't know. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get into start showing some of your photography and just talk about a couple of the projects that you've been working on. So everyone, we are with photographer Stephen Hurst. You're at Talk Radio NYC. We'll be back, and we're going to look at a little of his work. We're going to take a quick break. So we'll talk to you soon.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
All right, Stephen, we are back. So you are now listening to So Now You Know with Antonia, and we are talking to photographer Stephen Hurst. And Stephen, okay, I am figuring out Zoom because, you know, COVID Zoom, everyone is having to manipulate this. So I have your pictures up, and I'm hoping that you're looking at the screen for your fashion work, right?
Yes, it's a portrait and it's a black cowboy on the screen currently.
Yes, okay, because I have them all up. I have like two screens in front of me, so I'm excited. So talk to me about this, and we're going to go through this slate of photographs here. So was this a specific project? Like, tell us a little bit about the pictures that are in this deck that we're going to take a look at.
Yeah, so this is on the edge of Brooklyn, almost heading to Queens, kind of going towards JFK Airport. And my mom sort of lives out that way. And I would drive by and see basically, you know, this is urban New York. And all of a sudden you see this farmland. And I was always curious about it. So then I found out more information. And it was this the Black Cowboys. This is probably, 15, 20 years ago that I took these photographs. And I wanted to, at this time, I was really heavily invested in fashion photography. And so I wanted to do a fashion shoot there. And so I tried to sell them on the fact that I'd be bringing these models and, like, you know, a set of people. And they were kind of skeptical about the whole process. So then I just said, well, let me do a trade. How about I take photographs of all of you guys and your members? And then in turn, you'll let me do, you know, to kind of prove my process and show that, like, you know, I'm not going to kind of exploit the whole grounds that you have and the horses and whatnot. And then from there, you know, if you like the work, then maybe I can come back and use the grounds to take some fashion photos for the models that I was working with.
Okay, he looks intense.
Yeah. So this is funny. So, you know, there's there was a cowboy named, his name was Solo, and he was putting the whole thing together. And he's like, yeah, let's just make it all happen. And so I had no idea what I was getting into, honestly. Uh-huh. So I get into, and they have a room that's probably no bigger than 15 by 15. And they decided to put in one corner a fish fry. They made this into an entire party. And then there were about 40 to 50 people crammed into this room.
Wow.
And so I, you know, I was setting up, and this is actually the first time I ever done portrait work. And I'm set up in the room with my lights, my setup, and there are so many people in this room that literally I kept shaking the camera because they were, you know, drinking and bumping into me from behind because there was no space. So I had a friend there, this guy, Sean, and he was kind of basically doing crowd control, trying to keep them from bumping into me. So I kept knocking over the lights. It was controlled chaos.
Yes, but these are beautiful. These are beautiful. Just capturing the intensity of everyone.
Yeah. And you know, it's great. Like I think that in portraiture, there's the performance you do for yourself and then the performance that you do for others. And in a scenario like this where you have all of your fellow brethren around you, you know, who are back hooting and hollering, yeah. You know, they're there and he wants to show his tough guy look.
Yes,
which is totally great, and you know he's performing a little for me for the camera, but also for all of his brothers behind me.
Yeah, and just the capturing the leather of the clothes and the cowboy, it just captures. There's so much happening in that photography. Now, is that a prop or is that a real gun?
That's a real gun.
Were they sharing one, or did they all have their own?
Yeah, they were sharing one. Okay. So you'll see that maybe in another photograph they'll have another. Or share, but you know, they wanted to go the cowboy tough route, and so that was part of the process.
Wow, that's amazing. And how long and so is this on the outside of on the grounds?
This is in that shed that's like 15 by 15.
Okay,
where everyone was just pulling randomly, you know, hey, get over there, and this guy Solo was coordinating people to kind of just jump in the set. And maybe a few other pictures, you'll see they had like some hay on the ground and one guy was sitting on it. But yeah, everything was done in this one room. It took about an hour, 2 hours to go through the people. Shot on film way back when I don't even think I had a digital camera at that point.
And how difficult is it to film the horse? Like, 'cause that's a perfect shot. It's like he's kind of looking at the camera like, I'm ready.
Yeah.
And how does that work as far as like getting the perfect shot? Does it, I mean, you said you weren't there that long, but it looks like to get this, the background, everything is to get it that perfect.
One of the things I learned about, especially with portraiture, is the more you think about it, the better it is when you actually execute it. It's something I think I read about David Mamet. He wrote Glengarry Glen Ross and some other Broadway shows, but he's also a filmmaker. And for him, he would say that the boring part was actually on set shooting the film, because he had thought about it so much. He had so mentally prepared for all the ins and outs that when it came time to execute, that was the boring part, because he kind of thought it, you know, 10 ways from Sunday. So I went here and I scouted the location. I knew exactly kind of where I wanted to have it set up. I knew how the lights were going to be. And then once the goal is to like get rid of all the technical parts, get the technical parts set up as you want, and then just let all of that disappear. So it's just you and the other person. So that once I'm there and I'm working with the other person, then I can pretty much work pretty fast because I'm confident in what I have. But also I know at the same time that they're not going to, that I have a fear that I'm going to wear them out. I've been as an assistant on a photo shoot a couple of times where they're spending too much time trying to get the perfect look in my estimate.
And then
it goes, you know, on the other edge and you just feel like you a bad taste in your mouth. So I just want to kind of work fast. And then that also breeds confidence for the others. Like, wow, he knows what he's doing. He's doing it quickly. We like you. Right. And then they're more apt to give you more.
So how many shots would it have taken for you to get this? Because this, again, is another perfect shot where you just have the horse looking perfect. He's looking out yonder. I mean, it just says so much in this as a black cowboy. Like, there are so many things you could say to the story that's happening here from this. And he's probably just looking at you like, man, let's get this, you know, take this picture.
Now I don't see the photo. I see we're still on the first photograph that I see now. So I'm not sure which one you're.
Okay. You don't see this one here?
I don't see a horse.
Uh-oh. Maybe I'm going to catch up to you.
I'm on one of 28.
Oh, okay. You went back to the beginning. Okay.
Oh, wait, no, I didn't even.
Yeah, you might be to update your In the world of Zoom, because I went further back.
Just tell me the number you're on, because then I can look it up.
We're at 9. So we just came from where we had, you know, the horse outside. Now I came back to 8. Let's see. Let's go back so we can see. Okay. Yeah. Everyone just saw this was 7. Again, with the horse looking, is this porous? I don't know why this is.
Okay. So yeah, 7. So yeah, that guy, that's Solo. That's the guy that was coordinating the whole thing. And, you know, I've never worked with, photographing, horses. And one of my fears was, it was the light going to affect them, and cause them to spook off. But, you know, the cowboys, they assured me that, that everything would be okay. I had these kind of big lights set up and again, know exactly where I wanted to be. And then, at that point I, you know, I assumed that I only have 3 to 5 shots. Mm-hmm. And so I just try to crank them out, but each one, like, be very, just focused about what I want, try to get it, move to the next shot. So, so no more than 5, and especially I don't want to, I have this fear always of like it going sour and I want to get it before I go sour. So it's, you know, it's feel like, let's say you're on a time crunch or, you know, it's game day and you have to execute, when it's asked of you.
And it seems like with the horses, with animals, you know, you kind of got to keep it moving before they act up, right?
Yes, absolutely.
But I mean, they're cowboys, so you assume, oh, they can handle their horses, but still. So I hope, did this come back up on the screen?
Yes.
And I love this one with the cigar. Like, he's just totally serious. This is just awesome.
Thank you. Yeah.
And so tell us about him, because it seems like he had a story from his belt buckle to the cane. It seems like he just has a rich history here.
Yeah, so he was one of the OGs, one of the kind of original residents who started off this farm or area that basically they reclaimed. And word is, I'm not sure if this is true or not, that the entire area that they occupy used to be owned by the mob family, the Gotti family. And they had a bunch of their horses there and whatever. And then once they started going to jail and tax issues, the land was just there, but also the animals. And so these black cowboys came on the land and started squatting and basically taking kind of residence of the land. And then finally worked it out with the city that, like, okay, you got to give us the tax credits and whatnot and so forth, because we're a valuable asset to the city. And that's how it came to be. He was maybe a day or two after I'd done the shoot and I had come back and I saw him there and he wasn't there for the original kind of cookout shoot. And I asked if I could take his photograph and he said, sure. And I just pulled out my camera and shot a couple images with him. And this is one of them that came out of that.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. And again, with the leather and the horse, with his hoof up. and again, you capture it here. What's the story here?
This is funny because, and this always happens when you have multi-person shoots. Like I said before, they had this cookout, you know, we went on for, I don't know, an hour, 2 hours, and doing shooting and eating fish and whatnot. And people getting
drunk. Did he jump in on the shoot?
Well, he came late. And so I had broke everything down. Like, I was done. Oh,
there's always one, right?
There's always one. I was done. And he said, you know, I just got here. I was running late. Please, can I take it? I was like, oh, gosh. So I wasn't going to set up everything. It's like 3 or 4 lights and all these, you know, different modifiers. So I just popped a flash on top of camera and bounced it off of the ceiling. But I put him against this interesting backdrop, which was like this kind of like, you know, retro cowboy buffalo curtain that they had. And so it worked out for him.
It did. Absolutely worked out. And that's pretty too. Is this going more into the shoots that you do for folks?
Well, yeah. Well, this is, I guess, I want to make normal people kind of look glamorous to a certain degree. And this is from a foster parent event, actually. Many of these women are foster parents. And they have there's this agency, Children's Aid Society, that they do a kind of annual prom gala for the foster parents as a thank you for the work that they do. And so it's one of the few times where the men and women that are foster parents are able to kind of get dressed up and go out on a night on the town kind of thing. And so this time around, I've shot it for a couple of times, but I wanted to be a little bit more daring and do something that was a little bit more kind of fun and interesting.
It's beautiful. Celebrating the work. This is awesome. This is great. And I think I remember you talking about this.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's rewarding for working with kind of real people, and especially now in the age of fashion. Absolutely. I mean of the iPhone. Everyone knows how to kind of present themselves in front of a camera. And so that part of it is easier.
This is awesome. And look, that's just like so much fun captured there. So what would you say is your best type of photos that you love to take? That's a great shot too.
I don't know. I mean, I always kind of hope that my best photograph is going to be my next photograph.
Right.
You know, that I'm going to, like, I'm always trying to strive to kind of, it's this challenge of trying to stay consistent and have a identifiable brand, but at the same time, you know, consume yourself and change and do something different. So it comes as unexpected from you. But also feels new and fresh. And some of the great photographers that I really admire have had that ability over the longevity of their career to kind of redefine themselves through their imagery. And that's what's kind of beautiful about photography overall, is it's if you use it as a profession, at any point in time, under any circumstance, you can redefine yourself. You can rebrand yourself through a new portfolio.
Absolutely. This is so amazing. We're going to get ready to take our second break, and then we're going to come back and look at some more work. You're listening to Antonia, and So Now You Know, and I'm here with photographer Stephen Hurst. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening, The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
So you are back with Antonia on So Now You Know, and we're talking to Stephen Hurst, a photographer who's doing phenomenal work. And so again, Stephen, I changed it over to some other pitches, so I hope you're seeing them too.
Yes,
we're talking
yes.
about your street photos, which you kind of started talking about at the beginning of the show, of how amazing it is and what you capture when you're just, and I'm assuming when you're just out and about. I feel like you just get up in the morning, your wife is probably like, oh, here comes the camera again, like with these pictures. But it's just amazing. So how many photos do you think you take in a given day, like when you're going out, that you actually keep? Like, well, let's just say, how many clicks do you take during, like, on this trip that you've done these?
I'll go out and I could take 300 photos, and I'm lucky if I get 2, 3, 4, 5, because there's just so many factors. There's times where you're just kind of in the zone and your keeper rate is very high, and then there's other times where you could be out a whole day and think you've had great taken great photographs, and then they're all stinkers. So that's I think part of what helps in the creative process is that there's this bridge. There's the idea that you have of what you've done, and then there's the reality, and then it's like how to make that bridge between the two and make it repeatable. Mm-hmm. So with street photography, I've learned kind of like there's certain things that I look for, certain distances I want to be away from the person. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like this forced intimacy that I try to create without actually invading their space.
Yeah. I mean, I love this picture because it's like the two adults are just going about their business and he's looking at you like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times the kids will catch me. They'll see me, but the adults.
It just shows how observant they are. And so did this gentleman know, or were you from afar taking this?
He knew, but I feel like that there's agreement that's made that if you're out in front of Macy's on 34th
Street. With no shirt on and a flute.
With no shirt and a flute and standing on a stool that's 6 feet tall, that, you know, it's okay for me to photograph you and you know that I'm doing it. So,
Great shot. Tell us a little bit about this one.
So this is from Times Square, and basically the first three photos that you've shown, it's from kind of a larger kind of like overall theme is when they see me, and it's part about like, okay, I'm a Black photographer. What do they think and how do they react when they see me with a camera approaching them? Mm. And the backstory of that is when I moved to New York City, I think Amadou Diallo was shot and killed by the police officers. I think they shot him 48 times when he had turned around to pull out his wallet. And from a visceral point of view, it really freaked me out because I was a photographer. I love photography and I love to kind of like do candid photographs, but I didn't want to be perceived as being a threat when coming with my camera. So it really did change and affect how I would hold my camera and how and be aware of my surroundings more so. Cut to many years later, you know, there's this project I'm doing is when they see me is like, how do I approach people and when they see me and what is their reaction? And if I'm doing it good enough, it's like only a split second reaction. And then like, we're gone. We're not like you were there. We share this intimate moment that just happens in 1/250th of a second with the shutter click and I keep it moving. So this was in Times Square and just this girl, she was hugging a teddy bear and looking down. And I just like the symmetry of the whole family line there. And so I approached it.
Cause you look at this and you're like, okay, she's thinking about something. Grandma's looking dead at you. Like, what are you doing? And Grandpa's back there like, where are we? We're lost.
Yeah. Yes,
it just captures so much.
Yes.
This too is amazing.
Yeah. And one of the things I love about Times Square is, as a New Yorker, generally New Yorkers hate Times Square. They're like, just get me out of here.
It's overrated. Been there, done that, right?
yeah. But it's one of the few places from a photographer's point of view where people aren't actually looking down and staring at their phones. They're looking out onto the world with awe. So I actually get eye contact.
Yeah. This is a great one too. Great.
Yeah.
One.
So this guy, he literally hit me in the leg.
He's like,
Yes. So I was walking, I was going to the train and I was only seeing this guy's back and I was like, okay, I'm done for my shoot today. And he turned around and he like leg whipped me right in my shin. I mean, really hard. And it's like, damn. But at the same time, he said, I'm sorry. And then I said, Steven, you're a fool. This guy, this subject just literally hit you in the street.
So he's got an Indian dress.
Oops, sorry. So I started following him for the whole block. And even though we never spoke, he created eye contact with me. I got several photos of him.
You're good. Because some of these, I don't know, it'd be scary. Let me see. Yeah. The one he's, I'm sorry. I'm going to the.
No problem. Yeah, I love the guy on the left. He's just like chilling. Like, what's going
he's
on?
Like, he's like, it's New York. It's every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a great photo too.
Oh yeah, this is there's a Sikh parade that happens every year in the city, and I never plan on going, but I always end up being around there at that time randomly. You know, my wife went to go in to do her nails, and I'm like, okay, I've got an hour to kill, and so I walked around. It was around the corner, and yeah, just threw myself into it.
And so have you seen a change in your instrument? Like back in the day, you were talking about your dad's camera, and then today with so much going digital?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the technology is always changing, always evolving, and they're always doing a great sales job. And there's different cameras for different purposes. So, you know, I have my portrait cameras or like kind of professional cameras. And then I'll have ones that I'll go along on the street with. And then I'm experimenting with kind of toy cameras and then not so much film cameras, but cameras that give me kind of a look of film.
Nice. And I love this, like the action photo kind of in the background. I'd be, you know, I sit here and I want to say, oh, I could take that picture. And it's like, no, you couldn't. No, you couldn't. So how does your wife feel about your photography? Does she find like you're taking lots of photos of her? And
well, she hates that I take photos of her, you know, and if I do, they're not about to be published anywhere or put on any kind of social media platform. But she definitely helps me out. Like, for example, with the whole Harlem Street Studio project, it took me a while to kind of like work out how I was going to do it. And a lot of that had to do with testing it on her, you know, having a subject where I could test out like what are my lighting ratios? What is my backdrop? You know, how are all these things going to work and play together? And so a lot of it was like because of her that I was able to just kind of say, stay here and let me work on you. But she appreciates my work, and you know, we don't talk about it that much because we're always around each other, but she sees it. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just it's who I am. You know, I feel like it's my own therapy. Like I need to photograph or I'm not living.
So tell us about your fat cat picture. Because I always like the big cat.
Oh, yes.
That's what I mean. Yes. And one thing I do learn about people and their pets, they love pictures of their pet. But that one picture, it's, I don't know, it just captures everything. And I'll be honest, I'm not a cat lover. But I do feel that, I could have that cat. He seems fluffy. He seems happy. But then he's mysterious.
He's a pain in the butt. And I love him. He's a loudmouth. But yeah, so that picture, that was, again, I was testing lighting, you know, so a lot of times if I have the opportunity, I got a new piece of gear and I wanted to test it out. And we used to have this tradition, he doesn't do it anymore, where I would throw a treat down the hallway and he would just go running after it at full speed. So that look that he has is his kind of ready to pounce on the treat right before I'm about to throw it. So it's like, pretend to throw it with one hand. And then right when he gets in the right spot, take the camera, boom, snap some few shots and then give them the treat. So, yeah.
I guess everything in your household becomes like prime to take a picture. Your wife, yes. It's going to be the cats. Like,
if you're with a photographer, be expected of that. You know, you don't know what you're signing up for, you know, animal or human. So
talk to us a little bit before we take our last break and we look at some of your photos from the Harlem Street. Talk a little bit about that project that you've been working on.
So the origins of that were simply because, you know, COVID, the lockdown, a lot of the jobs that I had scheduled were either canceled, postponed to even 2021. And so the subways were a mess. And my wife is a social worker and her job recently located from Midtown to Harlem. And so we just decided, look, I'll just drive you to your job, right? You know, we don't want to be on the subways right now. And like I had the time. So I'd drive the job and then I'd load a movie up on my iPad and pretend to watch the movie. But what I found out is that I was more interested in the people walking by and seeing how, like, you know, so many beautiful faces and expressions. And then it's just started getting the blood thumping about, like, how could I photograph these strangers? And then George Floyd happened. So there was this part of me, I'm a black photographer and I do street photography, but I'm not necessarily kind of conscious about photographing black people outside of, let's say, a wedding, but in kind of a portraiture. And I felt at the time uncomfortable going to the protests only because like I didn't know what coronavirus was doing in COVID. Right. But I figured like, what can I use as my talents to kind of like, you know, extend this platform and this argument? And you know, there's the saying like, say their names, Well, for me, what kept striking me was like, see their faces. And the beautiful thing about a still photograph is you see this guy in the street or this person on the street, you might take a blink, split second, but with a photograph, you can longly stare at it. And you can create empathy by longly staring at it and making it a connection where in the other ways you wouldn't be able to.
So we're going to take our last quick break, and then we're going to come back and look at some of the amazing pictures that you've taken about. So just sit still for our last segment, because it's a lot of great stuff. So you're listening to So Now You Know with Antonia, and we're talking to photographer Stephen Hurst. We'll be right back.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Hi, and welcome back. You're listening to So Now You Know with Antonia, and we are here with photographer Stephen Hurst. And so, Stephen, you were just telling us about your Harlem Street project and how that came about. So can you set up for those that cannot see the pictures, how you formulated the pictures? Because in some of them, I don't see the background. It's the white drop. So can you talk a little bit about how that came to be and how you found the people and the imagery? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, first off, there's this famous photographer, Richard Avedon, and he's known that one of his styles is to shoot subjects on a kind of black and white, on a stark white backdrop. And that's usually done in the studio. And so my thought was like, how do I bring the studio to the street? Like people that wouldn't normally be in that kind of space. And also it's expensive to be in that space. And my thought was don't bring the subjects to the studio, go to where the subjects are and build your own studio. And, you know, there's some technical mumbo jumbo about it, but I used a very, very large softbox, which is usually used to light the front of a person. I decided to use it as the backdrop, which would give me this kind of beautiful, rich black and white. But then also, it really, what I want to do is I love the concept of like dark skin on a white backdrop, and it just really isolates them. And then, you know, what I referred to before is say their names. This is really a way to kind of see their faces and just like focus on them without any distractions of any background or anything of that nature.
Yeah, it's absolutely I'm looking at it. And as you said, I'm like, this takes black and white to a whole nother level. Because the richness of and the contrast of the colors is just a beautiful.
You know, I once heard a photographer, he's from India, and he almost exclusively shoots photographs. And someone asked him, well, why? You know, because most people, they go there, it's so rich in color and so many different things. And he said, because the color to me is too distracting. I want you to really focus on the humanity. And so I do have sometimes where I really feel like the subject is calling for color, but then other times black and white, I just feel like it just works better. So in this scenario, I set up my setup, and you know, there's a lot of kind of like anxiety and fear about it. Like I'm coming out with tons of gear onto the streets of Harlem, and I'm doing it by myself. So, you know, I have all these protocols of like where I set up, and kind of like I'm in my own little alleyway, but like not private, but public. And it was easy for me to just see someone, and the same techniques I would use for street photography. I would see this person. I'm like, this person has a great look. Let me see if I can convince them to work with me for 3 to 5 minutes.
So here you're asking people to participate with you.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I don't know anyone. I meet them. I say, hi, would you mind if I take your photograph? It only took me 3 minutes. And at the first day that I did it, this is from some of them, it was no problem. It was a sunny day. People were more optimistic and vibrant, whatever. She had just come from a protest herself. And she said, sure.
I was going to ask you about the flag. Is that her? That was her flag that she had with her?
Yes, yes. There was a protest that was about a block away. And so it's the African American flag, it has many different colors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it has the Pan African flag colors, but I just thought it looked better in black and white for these particular images because it gives it more a sense of kind of timelessness. Sometimes color is great, but sometimes color can also date photographs.
Yeah, and here too is just an amazing photo of a man and between his tattoos on his arms, the beard under his mask, the sunglasses. It just says so much.
I just saw him coming from Whole Foods. He's carrying his groceries back home or whatever. And I saw him, I was like, excuse me, can I? And he's just, sure. I worked for him for like a minute, 2 minutes, and was able to grab that. And just everything about him, he looks like a superhero in the making.
It almost blends in his beard into his shirt.
Yes.
The white.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is a beautiful photo too. And again, this one just pops up too. It's just a young man. He's, he's got his tattoos. They just pop also. But as you said, in the time of George Floyd and a lot that's going on in the community, it also says a lot. Whether he was saying, coming from a protest like the first woman or not, just how he's looking at you, how you captured that, is saying a lot. Like he's thinking about what's going on and he wants you to think about him between his hat, his gloves and everything. I just think it captures so much.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, and the process of just kind of a photograph is timeless. You can kind of really stare back at it and just try to create that story for yourself or that empathy. I also love the fact that, he's masked. He's there's only this little sliver, where you can see his eyes. And this is not meant to be a threat to anyone. This is just meant to be his honesty, his truth.
Right. Yep. It's amazing. And then this is a picture of his hat from the front side.
So what I didn't see it at first, after I was talking, I was like, thank you, because I'm really grateful for anyone who wants to step in front of the camera. And he pointed out to me all the people who have been killed. Through police brutality, and he put them on he wrote them on his hat, like as a basically like a walking tomb, a walking reminder. And so I was like, I need to have a photograph of that, and so I did that from a couple angles.
And it says a lot because it's a Yankees baseball cap, and people are very serious about their caps. And so he's definitely saying a serious statement here that, and it looks beautiful the way that he's tagged it in the front. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And I just think
that's still
beautiful.
That's still his face, right? Because now I thought it was him holding. At first, I just saw the hat, but it's actually he's tipping down his head to show you, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I think it's beautiful in the ways that people can, I think that the protests are extremely powerful, but it's like what we do as individuals also to kind of like to carry the heaviness of these times and how we memorialize them on a daily basis. That's something that he carries with him all the time.
Yep. And here you switch to color.
Yes.
With this woman, I guess she's shopping, coming back from shopping, but wearing her mask again. But the colors in the white just really, really, really pops. That's another, and the gloves, right? It's just so, you put like COVID 2020, and that's what we look like.
Yeah.
That is how we are. Beautiful.
And so, she got, one of my things is, when I work with people that I don't know and, I'm working with them very limited time, I let them lead the way, and I will follow. I capture them. That's what she wanted to give me. That's what she wanted to show me in terms of like, she was very exuberant. And so, I just was completely on board with that. And of course, because of her jacket and her glasses, it definitely was more of a pop of color type of situation as opposed to black and white.
And I just want to get most of these in before we have to wrap up, because these are just amazing photos. So will you keep doing this? Go ahead.
No, my goal is to every time that I would drive my wife to work, I would now set up. So it's been three times I think I've done it, but I want to do it for at least through the rest of the summer. And I'll probably just start going out on myself because I'll have more time to shoot. And really try to build a solid portfolio of at least 50 to 65 different individuals that I have photographed.
I see a coffee book. I see a book coming out of this, Stephen.
Well, I should hope. I should hope.
Yes, so, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and let's knock on wood that we never have another pandemic that we're ever going to live through again. I do think going forward, our lives are going to change as far as, masks and gloves and so forth. But I hope we never go through this again. So to capture this part of our history and the beauty of our people going through this is just fantastic. I hope you do that. I hope you do capture. And I see a little bit of the screen there that you're using in the back, right? I just want to make sure I get through all these because we are going to wrap up. So Stephen, can you just share with all our listeners how they can contact you?
You can I'm on Instagram at a man called Hurst, H-U-R-S-T. You can email me at theycallmehurst@gmail.com. So those are the best ways to reach me. A man called Hurst on Instagram and theycallmehurst@gmail.com.
And you can also visit Talk Radio NYC and just visit. So now you know, and the information will be there too and on the website. Because this is just amazing work. And I know I'm going to be looking out for that coffee book because that's going to be amazing.
With all these
the fantastic pressure is on. Photos. It is on. You got the rest of the summer. Everyone's going to be out there and it's just going to be exciting. Just please be safe. Definitely. Yes, definitely be safe. And I can't wait to have you back in the fall so that we can look at some of all the stuff that you captured over the summer. So thank you so much for joining me today. And you guys, again, it's photographer Stephen Hurst. Please check him out. The phenomenal pictures that he takes, but you know what? He can also come to some special events that you may be having to take that special photo, because it is, photos just, it's our history, right? It tells our story, and you just got to have someone who does it right, right? So thanks again, and I miss you, and you know what? When this is all said and done, we definitely have to come back to Brooklyn and hang out.
Yes, definitely.
Right? So give wifey a hug and your cat. All right, I'll give him a high five.
Yes.
And again, thanks for hanging out. And everyone else out there, thanks for tuning in today. We will see you next Thursday at 5:00. So now you know. Have a blessed week, Stephen.
Thank you. You too. Thank you so much. Alrighty. And thank you for the opportunity.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7:00 every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Hey, all you crazy listeners.
Looking to boost your business?
Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates?
Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.